Yat'e, hello. Welcome to Real Native Roots, Untold Stories, a podcast by a Native woman with deep roots, hosted by yours truly, Vicky Kitsili Boy Oldman. I am a lover of stories, a connector, and a holder of wisdom keepers. Each month, we will be connecting with our Native relatives and exploring what medicine our guests share and offer to us. Please join me on this uncharted journey to learn, connect, and reflect. Ayahat, thank you. Yat'e, hello everyone. I am so excited about today because I have something I want to share with you all, and that is I have an intern for the month. My intern is a young 20-year-old Diné man. His name is Gavin John. Lo and behold, he is my son. I've been having fun, you know, talking about how the podcast came to be. We are making it official in the sense of his internship. I'm like having him log his hours and debriefing with him. Like, what did you learn? What did you observe? It's been a lot of fun. I would love for him to say hello, introduce yourself, tell folks what this experience has been like so far.
Hi, thank you. I appreciate the introduction. I have learned a lot from this experience. My name is Gavin Kitsili Boy John. I am 20 years old. I am son of Jenny, Torichitni, Hushklishni, and Ashin. This is my first time being on here, so I am very honored and kind of nervous, but I do appreciate it. And I'm learning a lot. So this has been a great experience so far. I am really enjoying the process of learning, seeing what you really do, because it is hard to do two things at once. Doing your own thing, but also doing something you really love to do too. So thank you.
Thank you for being here. Gavin helped to prepare today in terms of researching what our guest is up to, what our guest has been doing. The reason why he wanted to do this internship, because he's finishing up a school project focused on addiction and homelessness. It just so happened to be that our guest, it just, like I tell you, the stars aligned in that he has knowledge and awareness about this. Tell folks why this topic is important to you.
I'm focusing on addiction and homelessness that is growing rampant in this community. A lot of young people, adults and elders, everyone is like suffering. Not a lot of people find their way out. To me, I think a lot of people should be educated in ways of understanding how they could help someone who they may know, their community and local government. But yeah, that's the subject I'm focusing on.
I'm hoping that it also sheds light that when you tell your story, especially things that are really raw, that it is healing to even just tell the story and to normalize that we all have struggles, that we need to tell our own narrative. And that's part of the healing. And that's one of the reasons why I'm doing this podcast, because the more we tell the story, the more that we see each other as human beings, and we're not all perfect. I'm going to read this poem from the book, What Comes from Spirit by Richard Wagamese. It starts like this. Rejoice, an odd word that literally means to experience joy again. That should be our daily mission, to experience joy. Sure, there's stuff that needs doing, stuff to wade through and stuff to fix, but there's also the joy of small things. A hug, a conversation, playing a song all ragged and rough on an instrument, walking on the land, listening to the great music, or enjoying silence and a cup of tea. Rejoice. Fill yourself again. I love this. It made me think about when it said there are simple things like a hug. Every day, my son and I always, always give each other a hug. First thing in the morning before we exit the home, and then last thing before we go to bed. And it's those things, the conversations, silence. So I hope you find that in yourselves. Do you have any thoughts about the poem, Gavin?
Thank you. I really think that poem is good. I like the way it's worded. I don't know. I haven't really used that word as much lately. Rejoice. I like the way it defines it. I think we all deserve to find happiness every day. beautifully put together, especially for anyone in any kind of profession, artist, musician, businessman, teacher.
Thank you. All right, folks, I'm going to introduce our guests. I am so excited about meeting this gentleman for the first time. I've known him for a couple of years, not personally, just I've seen him on social media and I've heard him and we have mutual friends in different spaces. And so I would see his thread every now and then. It's actually been almost a year. It was last year in May when I connected with him and said, hey, would you like to be on this podcast? He was crazy busy traveling all over, but he's here. His name is Lauren Anthony. This young gentleman is amazing. He is the people of the community. He's real in that he's in the space of community, helping people, connecting people, volunteering and giving time. He's also an actor, a writer, a musician first. I think he was a musician first. And he's an advocate for the people. He's had experience personally and also professionally in the area of addiction, helping young people and individuals. He's a motivational speaker. He's a gym rat, pumping metal. Lauren Anthony, please bring your voice into the space.
It's Lauren Anthony. Hi.
Hello, Lauren. Before we jump in, I know that I always like folks to introduce themselves. Why don't you do that and tell us a little bit about what you think of the poem?
My name is Lauren Anthony. I come from the Cheska Mountains on Navajo Nation. And the poem reminded me of getting rebuzzed. Like, you know, where you drink all night. You just want to get drunk again. So you just drink one can in the morning and you're instantly buzzed. So you're rebuzzed. So thinking about rejoice, the word re, we don't really think about it a lot because there's rewind, there's replay, there's relapse, and there's all the things that we do over and over again that we don't realize what we're doing. So when we rejoice, I think that's an awesome word because of the word joy that's in there. Joy is something that's temporarily, but it feels really amazing when you have it. And when you understand how do you achieve it on a consistency daily, it's all about maintenance of your self-awareness of who you are spiritually, mentally, and emotionally. So always keeping this thing on check of being in a joyful mood.
Wow, that's pretty deep. I would have not even thought of the word rebuzz. I didn't even know that was a word.
I just made it up.
Oh, you just made it up?
I mean, I've heard it among the party crowd back in the day. It was a term where you're like, you have alcohol in your system and you're going to that addict lifestyle that you see people that don't need much to get really drunk. It's like, wow, how did they get from 0 to 60 in a matter of a minute? And it's just because of like the alcohol that's sustained within the body, especially if you're a veteran partier, an alcoholic, that the little bit of alcohol that you do need when you do get into those really hard points of addiction where you're just maybe even drinking hairspray and all of a sudden you're just super out of it. So rebuzz is a thing that I use a lot with people because it can be relatable to people that are really into that moment of just try not to get sick when they're trying to get sober, which is such a weird thing because you're one feeling like trash and you want to get better, but you also want to get drunk again because that's the only thing that's going to take the pain away. So it's a weird cycle.
I love that we just dived in deep on this topic.
That's the plan here. I want to dive in as deep as possible with this. A lot of my friends and family in my circles and in my sheep corral, because I have different tiers of sheep corrals here. So I have my Hoanda Maze, which is the hogan, the home that I live in. But inside of that is all my deepest and most potential highest power stuff that I can give people. The most healing I can give people, the most healing I can give myself. Then outside of that, I have my sheep corral. And then I have another sheep corral outside of that sheep corral. Then I have another sheep corral outside that sheep corral. So majority of my followers are on the furthest of the sheep corral. So you're only seeing what I'm putting there because that's my boundaries. It's what you, I'm giving what I deserve. And some people don't have access to those inner sheep corral moments. What I like to get out of this podcast and this interview and the speaking and the conversation is my most vulnerable thoughts and experiences on the table here.
I love that you brought up boundaries. I mean, I love the sheep corral. That's cute. Because I feel like I'm speaking for myself. I feel like I didn't really learn boundaries until I got older, until I got hurt in different ways, whether it's professionally or with a personal love relationship or even a friend, right? And it was because I was nice. I just wanted to like make sure everybody's happy and they got what they need. And then I got to a point where I was just so tired and I was like, what is this? And I started to do my own healing. And then I realized I have no boundaries. I don't know how to say no to people. I have a friend who would say, Vicky, you don't need to explain any further. You just say no and thank you. And then that's it. They don't need to know anymore. And that has taken years of practice, Lauren.
It does take a lot of difference and practices of even just your words. You know, working with addicts, I tell a lot of our people in recovery, the word I don't versus I can't makes a big difference. I don't drink. People know that about me. So therefore, they don't bother with me about it. But if I say I can't, then it becomes, oh, why not? Like, how come you can't have that? Like, and then you have to go into explaining yourself. And then that just brings this whole other thing about. So your words have powers and how you word things and say things, because we live in a world where a lot of subliminal messages are out there.
Yeah, words are so powerful. In fact, this morning, I was looking at your story and I was like, oh my God, he did what I did. Because I believe in manifestation. I really...
You were dancing at the gas station?
No, it was not... No, you had said something like, to my future love. After my healing, I was like, well, whenever it happens, it happens. But I remember I would write love letters. Like, this is where I'm at. I hope you're well. Like, I was manifesting what I wanted. And it made me think about my grandmother. When she would tell me this younger, I didn't understand. But now that I'm older, I understand. She would say, be careful what you think. Be careful what comes out. And what she was really saying is, like, you're manifesting these things. Your mind is so powerful. She would say in the Nepedza language, the Navajo language, she would say our mind is so powerful. We make ourselves feel so weak when we're not. It's all in our brain. And the more that I'm learning about the brain, I realize, geez, we're like playing on ourselves.
Right. I know my grandma used to say exactly the same thing as the Nep people, Navajo people. We come from the stars, and with coming from the stars, we are holy people. So therefore, anything we say that comes out of our mouths is holy. And you don't get it as a kid. You're just like, huh, that's cheap, grandma. I'm just from the stars. And it's like, but it's more than that. You get older and you realize a lot more is a lot different. And you kind of pace yourself a little bit more on thinking about these kind of things, because the manifestation is real, and the next step up from that is prayer. And a lot of people don't understand that either. It's like, oh, well, I don't pray, and that's fine, but like, you're also manifesting things, so you are praying. So ha-ha on you kind of thing. It's really interesting to me, like with the manifestation part, because for years I was manifesting the wrong people, the wrong situations, the wrong opportunities. I always wondered why these certain people would come back into my life or certain things would happen again. You go through the things of, wow, you start feeling it adding up and you're like, why is this always happening to me? Why is this always consistently happening to me? What next attitude? So going through things recently within the year or so was like just a lot of healing, facing traumas, going through the hard, vulnerable moments of understanding who I am right now at this time and carrying on forward into being a stronger individual. So as I wish my future love, my future wife, my future partner, my future person that's down the road, I already feel like I love her. I already feel like I have that type of love for that person. And I know that working on yourself now is great, because even if it doesn't happen, I just be some old sugar Che or something like that. With nothing else to do, just by myself. I feel good by myself. I feel great. I feel good that I'm still able to do all the things I'm doing. I'm glad that I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not an addict. I could say that I have those qualities within me, but I don't let it define me to say, hey, I'm Lauren Anthony and I'm an alcoholic. That's cool for other people in those kind of programs. But for me, I don't want to put that on myself. It's just the same way of like, I deserve to find and be happy in any relationship, not just in a romantic way, but in a partnership of friends, partnership of business, partnership of community, and the partnership of any kind of projects that come to mind, creativity-wise, or just adventure, going out and not knowing what we're going to do and just have a blast.
I love it. I love it. I I love that you said, I don't like to label myself. Use that example because, again, messaging and the words. And during my healing process, I finally realized, like, I am enough. You know, you think about trauma, historical trauma, family trauma, it layers. And then it gets to the point where I'm like, okay, enough is enough. I acknowledge that and I'm going to move forward. I'm not going to consider myself a victim.
I like the way you have said everything. Addiction is like a lifelong journey. Not many people understand that it's just something that's part of you. As someone who has experienced addiction, what kind of advice would you want to give to any like young adults or anyone who's struggling and needs help?
I think it's best to answer a question with the question in a lot of terms, because obviously when you really look at the questions within yourself, it's the most vulnerable spot that you can put yourself into, because addiction is one of the scariest things to quit, not just with drinking, but it could be a toxic relationship. It could be the gym. I love the gym, but that also can become an addiction to where it's taken over your life and you have dishes piling up and you got anthills full of laundry at the house and you're just not looking at the other side of balancing things out. That's when addiction comes into play, because addiction can just be more than drugs and alcohol. It could be a lot of other things. When you look at it that way, it's like, what are you really addicted about? And what are you willing to sacrifice to change those things? Because once you realize you have to cut things off in order to get better and need to strive to succeed, you're going to have to want certain things. And see, those are the things that I always addressed, is those key words, is like, you don't have to do a lot of things, but you want to do them. And when you want to do them, then you feel like you need to do them. So there's a lot of calling to your own heart on what's best for you. We all know the answers, no matter what advice you get from anybody. We know what to do already. We just don't want to do it. We don't want to do the hard work. We don't want to put in the time. We don't want to put in the sacrifice. We don't want to put in that little bit of extra effort to make the things right. So with addiction, it's always a choice. I never tell anybody, don't drink, don't do this, don't do that, because that also just puts people in like, okay, well, I didn't get the advice I needed. But really, it's really digging within and like, what is causing this? What's the root of it? And so for me, going through addiction myself was pretty much the same as going to your favorite restaurant. What's your favorite food to eat at a restaurant?
Steak.
Steak. Yeah. You know where that place is at, right? I want you to think about that steak.
Okay.
It's juicy, right?
Yeah.
It's cooked the way you want it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you cut it, it looks perfect.
Yeah.
And then you put it in your mouth, mm-hmm. and that warm, like, steak flavor just engulfs your mouth with the flavor that you just blows your mind. And you just, like, you just go through this moment of, like, your eyes could roll back and touch your brain kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What if your favorite place, you know, accidentally had a couple flies on it or a cockroach? Would you go back there and eat again?
No.
Are you sure? Maybe a year from now. What about a year from now? Would you go back?
Maybe.
Maybe, right?
Yeah.
That's the same way with alcoholism, drug use, any kind of addiction. I partied out so many times as a kid. You got to imagine 13 years old touring with a lot of the big boys. Doing Rockstar Mayhem tour, playing with bands like Lamb of God, Hatebreed, Soulfly. Last tour we had was with Fear Factory, a lot of really well-known groups, and we were winning awards, winning a lot of different accolades, getting on the radio, we're on magazine covers, a lot of big things were happening for us. We got signed, so a lot of great stuff was happening. And amongst that was all the partying, so of course, a lot of celebrating. Yeah, we did a show, cool, party out. Yeah, we got on radio, cool, party out. Yes, we got a tour, party out. So everything was like a party all the time, anything, whatever we could celebrate was a party. But every party was always about the same. It was good, was great, but one thing might happen. Maybe someone will get in a fight, not me, but someone else, and it affected our team, our band. Or things had happened to where I ended up in jail and I beat up people, or something had happened. Something really crazy, some really bad things were said to each other. There's a lot that went on, but I've always took it as that steak. I've always took it as like, oh, it was just that one time. It wasn't that bad. It was okay. I'll go back. And over time, that's how the addiction sneaks up on you, because you'll go back and have that steak because it had flies on it a year ago and it wasn't that bad. So when you go back to have that steak, it was like, oh, It's back to normal again. It's like the way I liked it. It's cool. And it all adds up over time to the point where you're like knee deep in addiction. So knee deep in it. And just like the gym. Like I go to the gym more than the average bear, but I'm also aware of all the other things I need to do. I can't let that consume my life or just totally be my life. I like to promote it as far as like getting people active and stuff like that. But there is a point of like where it can be too much. We got to look at the addiction sides of like, how are we maintaining our lives in a way of so we're not being so repetitive? There's another reword. Because once you become repetitive, you realize you become predictable. And for me, I don't like being predictable. I like being a mysterious person to people out there in the inner world because they're watching me from the third tier of the sheep corral.
Yeah, I totally feel that.
Yeah.
I don't really like attention either.
But eat your steak, man. Yeah, enjoy the steak. But
I respect that.
Yeah. But be careful.
I definitely agree. And I understand that. That's a really good analogy for sure. Yeah, addiction could be anything, not just like drugs and alcohol. In today's society, the newer generation is social media. Even that is like an addiction. People need to like, I need to be seen. I need to be validated. I need to be blah, 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 blah. Like, and that's just an example. It's crazy to really look at it. A lot of people don't see it that way. And they just like keep going back to that like nasty steak without even caring.
Well, I love that you brought up the social media because I know, Lauren, earlier you were saying you used the word organic and why you wanted to meet in person and actually use that in connection to social media about what we've lost. So talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Organic, for those that don't know the word, it's partly of being of origin, original, being in the way of where you're in the mix. And we can't be in the mix of being original if we're so disconnected from one another. So for me to come here to your beautiful home, meet your puppy, it's a great feeling to have that because you get to take these memories with you. And when people watch stuff online, they don't get to experience that feeling too because things have turned to Zoom, things have turned to FaceTime, things have turned to the Insta chats and stuff like that, which is great. But at the same time, there's nothing tangible to really say, I have this from this. And when I first got here, I was just mentioning that it's really weird to hand out my picture. I do that a lot when I go places now. It took a little bit of me to get over that because when you're healing as an addict, you also go through this like weird phase of selfishness and weird phase of this is too much. I'm asking for too much. And so when you do anything for yourself, it feels like I'm being too much for a lot of things. So me handing out a picture is not just me handing out a picture anymore. It's me also like saying I was here. Promoting myself, of course, the things that I'm doing because I want people to know what I'm up to, but not in the sense of look at me show. I think that can get really confusing, the look at me show. I've been in that a few times, coming out of it many times, looking into it. It's a very confusing place for a lot of people to understand. So when you have that headshot that I do hand out at events or parties or just around the community, because I do a lot of stuff with the schools and a lot of the kids have them. And so it's really nice to see people have them pinned up on their fridge or at their office, and they'll send me something on Insta stories, like tagging me like, oh, there's Lauren, or somebody would see it. Oh, there's Lauren. And that's really cool because it gives people a story to talk about. When I was playing music at 13, we had to promote our own shows. We did a lot of different shows from like the local shows out to national shows. And when we were really grinding because we were one of the first native bands, especially from our area, to headline the Whiskey Go-Go in Los Angeles, California. So during that time frame, we had to go and sell our own tickets and promote our own stuff. So we had to hand out flyers. Everybody had a niche too, because it was like, how do you outdo that guy's flyer or that girl's flyer? And so you had to come up with some really cool ideas. And it was nice because there's flyers that I still have from long ass time ago. It's like, and it's now it's, I look back at it and I can hold it and look at it and be like, I remember this time frame. I remember what we went through. I remember all these things. So a lot of the tangible things we're missing out in. And I think that's a big part of what we're missing out in the world these days is we're not getting out there. We're not really experiencing life. We're just watching through this weird pervert hole of social media, watching people do whatever they want to show you. That way they can feel validated or make you feel invalid on top of that because you're not doing enough. That's a real thing. And for me, I try to be as real as possible. What you see is what you get. I don't use filters. Even with my mouth, I have to pace myself sometimes because I work with kids and it's like sometimes a little bit of that pirate comes out. And but keeps it real too. It keeps it real because from that addict sense too, it's like I think addicts and kids know if you're full of it, if you're full of BS. And puppies too, I feel like. Puppies, addicts, and kids all know if you're full of it and they know if you're being genuine or not. That's something I want to maintain and strive for throughout the rest of my life is to have that genuine and compassion feeling that I give to people in the sense of however they choose to view me, support me, watch me, even if they don't like me. I'm still going to be who I am, show up as I do, be there for my people in the community.
And it's usually the ones who don't like you that will be really watching you.
Yeah, for some reason it is. So they're doom scrolling away and a lot of times they got cross-eyed. So you kind of know when you see them, you know, it's like their eyes are crossed. So they must watch me a lot. It's interesting to me with that because that also can really play with your head as an addict. You want to feel validated in a lot of things and you want people to cheer you on throughout your sobriety. And I was big on that for a while. There, my very first round of sobriety, because I relapsed 4 times before I actually stayed on track. And that's one thing people don't talk about is like, oh, well, I've been sober for this long, cool. But it's like they don't talk about all the other times that you failed before you actually stayed on track. Going through the failure parts of any kind of goal is that those are stories that you don't really hear a lot of people always bombing, giving up or restarting or quitting, taking time off. There's a lot of different forms of that. It's a fun ride, but also a rough one.
Using your words organic, I wanted to flow into this. Let me play this just a minute. I want you to hear it. And then I want you to talk a little bit about what we just heard.
I'm kind of scared what you're going to play. Because I have some rowdy train videos online that I cuss a lot on.
Okay,
so well. We'll see.
Okay, right, we'll see. All right, here we go. Hold on. All right. You know who this is.
Wow. There's so many different hats I wear. It's hard to keep up with myself sometimes. And it's pretty interesting to reflect on these in my life right now. A lot of people focus on one thing and want to thrive, which is great. But for me, I have so much love for different things that I'm doing that I just go all out for them. So what you guys heard was the new band I have called Hell Throne. We're a Dene native heavy metal band, and we just enjoy playing fast, hard music and performing them to live audiences wherever we can. And that's been something that I've stepped away from for a long time because as a kid, touring and going through that whole time frame, my original band was called Bloodline. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of cool stuff. My first mentor in the music industry was a gentleman by the name of Randy Castillo. I didn't know he was native at all. He's from Cochiti, and when I met him, he was playing for Motley Crue. Great drummer, but he was also known for playing drums for Ozzy Osbourne during the Shout in the Dark era.
Wow, so, yeah. That's sick.
Yeah, so getting into heavy metal is all thanks to my sisters because growing up on the res, we didn't have a whole lot of access to what we have today for a lot of things going on, and especially in the border towns or the big cities. It was just us in the dirt or us in the trailer. Even with television, we had to use my dad's wrench to turn the antenna to get certain channels. But I remember them really being into big hair 80s metal bands. And I was a little guy, little squishy, chubby guy, and just wanting to be in the mix with all these older kids. And they had the big hair and rolled up pants at the bottom. And I was like, why you guys all wear white shoes, but everything's black? I love my sisters. I love my family. And I remember we jammed like the whole Motley Crue album. I can't remember exactly which one it was, but it was Motley Crue. And we got trash cans, set them up to be drums, and we got broomsticks, and we pretended to air guitar the whole album. It was fun. It was like one of those moments. All my problems were gone. It was great. And it was at that moment that I felt like I really want to do this. Like I want to play music. Because I remember seeing the videos that they used to watch. And I'm like, man, this is cool. This little guy, you know, just watching this stuff. So going through that whole motion, that was like my first headbanging experience too, because the next day we all had a sore neck and we were moving around like Batman, all stiff. It was like, whoa, like never had that kind of soreness before. Now, decades into all this, it's like my neck is really primed up for all of the headbanging we do today. Getting into the whole music scene, it was great until addiction caught up with that. You know, having a good mentor was great up to that point, but Randy never like said, go do the bad stuff. I found that out on my own. And everything you would think with tour life is exactly what it is. Everything that you would hear about is exactly what happens. The drugs, the girls, the rock and roll, all that lifestyle, it's all there. So it's very indulging. It's very easy to get into. A lot of people are involved in that behind the scenes stuff with the whole industry. So I learned a lot about the entertainment industry at a very young age and learned a lot about how things work with contracts and touring and getting things going. So when I jumped into film, it was an easy transition because I've done the dive bars as a kid. I've done the big shows, the big festivals, and been able to be treated like a king at these big events and then go to the dive bar shows. So the same thing goes with film. It really dives into all that. I needed to take a break from heavy metal so that way I could get sober. That's what was one of the things I did. And then doing Chish for Che for 14 years, that was my sobriety too. That was part of what helped me get sober. Along the line, I did do a lot of solo projects, playing acoustic music. I did restart Bloodline for a little bit, but I told the guys, I was like, I'm only doing this if you guys are going to be sober. Once we started back up, everything was great. And I'm not talking bad about them because they know about this conversation. We've had this already. It was just facts that, well, I'm not going to do this if you guys are drinking. So once we did our first couple of shows, all the old people came back and wanted us, not in the sense not of the party crowd, but more of the like the management, the booking agents, the regional teams and stuff like that, wanting us to tour. And that was great. But at the same time, I was like, man, I don't feel like I know if they're sober enough to be able to handle this. They've been out of the game for so long and I've still been in the entertainment industry. I don't know if they're going to be able to hack that. And I was a different person too, because business-wise, I'm like thinking, you guys can't. This is not going to be a good idea. And of course, they gave in. They ended up showing up to the show's buzz. And I'm like, okay, we'll finish out what we have and see where it goes from there. Now, I took a little time off because of the pandemic. Went to Chish for Che Mutual Aid like 24/7 for a while. And that really drove me into the ground like 2 years in. And I wasn't using my boundaries at that time. And I was just letting everybody just take over with everything that I had, resource-wise, financially, physically, emotionally, everything. My team was like, chill, step away. And I was really grateful for that. Majority of our volunteers are all on their own sobriety journey. Within that team, all of them have been volunteering with me for over at least 7 years. That's a big accomplishment in itself, with just being able to keep people there. And it's all about transparency. It's all about making sure we're communicating with each other, making sure that we're understanding what's going on. And for me, during that time frame, they were just reading a lot of my body language and just seeing like, okay, well, Lauren's driving herself into the ground. Once I got back into the gym, started eating right, I was like, okay, I'm ready to really get back at music again. And I did my first open mic just for the heck of it. That same day I got signed for a record deal, just doing...
Congratulations. It's amazing.
So just doing an acoustic album. Heavy metal country, dark country type thing.
What?
Yeah.
Can you sing a little? I dare you.
I'm looking for love in all the wrong places. <Just kidding.
laughs> There, yes. There you go. You got a little taste, folks. A little taste.
The other thing about that was like being back in the studio was so surreal and everybody was so happy for me. A lot of my friends didn't know that I played music, were just automatically exposed to that because I didn't really say a whole lot. Just a lot of my older friends that know me from the tour stuff know about that lifestyle. But now it's like an explosion of things. Now working with Hellthrone and, you know, playing music with them, the guys are amazing, really supportive on sobriety, supportive on producing a positive output. It's a big difference from how things were at the end with Bloodline, because these group of guys, like, they're all about, let's make this a business. Let's make this something that we're going to strive to really set the bar for ourselves. So I'm really grateful for all the guys in Hellthrone, and we've been having some amazing times together so far. You know, people like think about it, it was like, that's kind of little kid stuff. Why are you playing heavy metal? Like, why are you playing music? Why are you touring? Why are you doing all that? And it's like,
really?
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Because a lot, we're alive and we have a life here and it's calling to your heart. I feel like I'm in a good place for it too. My very first metal performance was during the metal fest they had for on the Navajo Nation with In Flames. I don't know how that plot. My friends from In Flames, like, it was great to reconnect with them. Coming back to the metal scene, it was really a big homecoming for me. And everybody came out, and it was just really great to have that feeling back on stage, because at that time, I'm going through everything in my life, especially within that year, this past year. It was like all these hardships and reconnecting with who I was as that guy who loved heavy metal, that little kid, reconnecting mm-hmm. with that little guy who lip sync with his sisters, being the man that I am now, because I feel like I'm the man now that I needed to be when I was that little kid. And so therefore, I'm just putting everything into the efforts that I'm doing individually with all the projects from music to film to the community stuff.
I think it's so beautiful. I'm just so surprised people would make the comment about why are you doing this? Music is healing. It's an art form. I'm a strong advocate for art. I'm sure when you were in the first band, Bloodline, and then creating this new band, so much lived experience has influenced what you're creating now. I wanted to ask Gavin, before we talk a little bit about the movies and Chiz for Chiz. Gavin, I know you as well love music, and he's learned how to play by ear. Do you want to ask him anything? I don't know if you have any questions about music in general.
Thank you. I don't really get to talk to many people who actually have experienced being a successful musician. Personally, for me, I don't want to put myself out there too strongly because I'm just doing what I love. I respect that like a ton, to be able to like accomplish what you do. Personally, I've only been playing guitar for about like 5 years now. And I've been playing drums since I was a little bit younger. Just growing up, I just messed around with it. I had a teacher. His name is Jaden. He really helped me get a hang of learning the basics. And I also took a guitar class in high school too. Personally, I feel like music and art is the best remedy for a lot of forms of expression that you want to do for yourself or for anyone or as a group. Art and music has definitely helped me in many ways through like my cancer journey and getting through life. Just in general, with depression and addiction, anxiety. It's weird because like music, you know, the artists, they don't know you, but it's what they express and say. It still helps you immensely. That's very powerful. I guess a question of mine is, what advice would you give to any young musicians, indigenous or not? Any kind of things you wish you knew back then?
That's beautiful, Gavin. Thank you for sharing all that. For reals, like everything you just said was a lot of the things I was going through at many times in my life, not just as a young person, but just even as an adult. I feel like growing up, I had a few good people in my life that helped me out. And a lot of them were doing bad stuff sometimes, like my uncles who were drinking. And every time I saw them, they had one less tooth than the last time I saw them, because they would fight each other or something goofy because they were drinking. But I always remember this uncle named Jackson. Which was, you know, ironic because there's a Jackson guitar and that's what I play too. And I see you play Jackson. So we're Jackson boys right now.
Right.
But it's just those coincidences that happen like that, that kind of reconnect people. He had a guitar and he would just jam and he didn't know anything. He was just happy, enjoying that moment and just playing the guitar. And you just hear him detuning it and tuning it back up. And it just be like, and he didn't know what he was doing. He was just having a good time. But those uncles, like, I felt like, you know, he knows how to play. Like, I didn't know he didn't know how to play. He just looked like he did. And then I had uncles who showed me how to brand cows, castrate, vaccinate. And we did a lot of that as kids, too. So I had a lot of man's man type people in my life where you don't show emotion. And it was really weird. Overall, like, the factor of all of that was I assumed that my uncles knew everything. When we see adults, we think that about them a lot of times. But now that I'm at the age where I'm my uncle's age, what I really realize is like they didn't know nothing. I don't know nothing. And that's the big thing, is we stress out about trying to know everything. Really, we don't know anything at all. As much as we have Google, I always say Happy Father's Day to YouTube, because YouTube's my dad now. So anything I need help with, I go to YouTube and my dad tells me. Coming through with that, I think that's a really important thing to know as an artist, that you don't know nothing. you consistently grow and learn all the time. The biggest advice I could give any artist, musically, writing-wise, to film, to whatever it may be, is like, you're going to have to start off with an idea. And that idea is always great in your head, but the scary part is putting it down on paper. Anything to writing the song, writing the script, writing the story, writing the project, writing it down on paper, because that's when it becomes the big reality right there. Is like, you can see it. It becomes tangible. Mm. It becomes something.
I like
that. You give it life. Mm-hmm. Now, once you give it life, it's up to you if you want to let it die. So you got to feed it all the time. And feeding it is just like how we feed our bodies. We're taking in so much in our diet, not just food-wise, but by visuals, by listening, by reading, by watching people and seeing how they take in. And we can put this in our arsenal of like storytelling. We could put this in our arsenal of how we're going to handle things. Those are really important as artists in general of starting out in music, is understanding what kind of arsenal do you have. Because once you know your arsenal and you know your mass audience, then you can speak for yourself. And once you speak for yourself, that's when people will say, I like that song because it speaks to me. And once it speaks to you, it speaks to so many other people too, because you're saying something that no one else is going to say because they're too scared. The scary part is that, again, that tangible paper that you write down your idea, because that's the scary part right there.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I haven't done anything like official with music, but I plan on. I do love creating and like the whole concept of putting your own kind of world together with all these different vibrations, frequencies to some extent. I feel like music does heal you for sure. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Music has saved my life so many times. I can't even remember how many times it saved my life, because playing music in just general takes me away to a place where I can't be hurt. No one's going to hurt me. And being on tour and playing on stage is the same way I feel that I'm on set, on a movie set. I feel like I'm in my place. I'm in my territory. I'm in my own home, my home turf here, and I feel safe. I'm able to navigate through whatever I need to do at that time. Because throughout your life, you know, you're 20 now, but in 20 years, it'll be 40. And that time frame can go by pretty fast. Just the same way as like you look at it 10 years ago, you were 10 years old. It's like that time frame goes by so fast. Everything. Life is so wild. There's so many twists and turns and plot twists and things. People come and go. People pass. People decide to go and do something else. And that's totally fine. But as long as you have something to stay grounded, and music has always been something that's been helpful to me. Even though I wasn't touring anymore, I was still at home playing the guitar. I was still at home writing stuff just for myself. It was some way to have expression. And we're losing a lot of that with social media. We're losing a lot of that because people would rather jump online and complain about their life at that time versus building something constructive, having something tangible again to show for it, to say like, I was going through this hard time and I made this cool painting, or I was going through this hard time and I made this cool song. And people only just post online just to attract more hurt people. Going through my whole single life this whole year, I've noticed that there's a lot of hurt people out there.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of hurt people.
Absolutely.
And the way I look at it is like we all have a flashlight, just mm-hmm. like we have candles here on the table at this podcast. The candles, you know, flicker, but if we turn the lights off and it's at night, we're going to attract things. People are going to wonder, what's that? But if we have a big bonfire, I'd say I have a bonfire. Not to sound cocky or anything, but I feel like I have a bonfire because I have good people around me that help feed me good wood. But some people have a really crappy fire because they have people who put trash in their fire. And they're saying, here's bags of trash. I'm going to keep you lit. You know, lit's a term that they use these days, right? Oh, it was lit. Like, okay, cool. Like, was it trash pile lit or was it like the dot ceremony style lit, you know, where you got the summer ceremonies with the logs all piled up and they light that thing up and you can see it for miles. Because a long time ago, that's what they used to do, is get on top of the sacred mountains to communicate to each other, light fires on top, and they would see the four points. Yeah.
Wow, that's really unique.
And so within that time frame, that's how we would see stuff. So when you have a good light going on, people are going to think you know something. You don't. And the other thing about that is like when you turn the lights on, all the rats and mice and cockroaches disappear. But when your lights are off, you attract all the moths too.